from Tukito LLC. It's Keto Woman Podcast with Daisy Brackenhall.
Hello, keto lovelies. I'm Daisy Brackenhall, and I've spent most of my life struggling with my weight and confidence, and have always had a difficult relationship with food. Even when I finally got to my target weight, after weight loss surgery and eating low carb, I couldn't maintain it and I was miserable. Keto has given me the freedom to fall in love with food again, without the constant gain, loss, guilt, virtue cycle of before. Health and happiness is where it's at now, running on fat. Welcome to the Keto Woman Podcast. Each week I'll be chatting to inspirational women, maybe even the odd man, to discover the secrets to their success so that I can share them with you. So what is keto? Keto is a way of eating that enables you to switch your body's main fuel source from sugar to fat. Who doesn't want to be a fat burner, right? But how do we achieve this? A great place to start is by keeping carbs to 20 grams or less per day. So things like leafy greens and above ground vegetables, plus some nuts and seeds, and the incidental carbs you find in things like dairy. Moderate protein, scale to your lean body mass, and then fat to satiety. Once you're in the swing of things, you can tweak it to suit you. Make your own personalised keto. I'll be asking my guest each week what their keto looks like to show you just how flexible and fabulous this way of eating can be. I'm not a doctor, and most of my guests won't be either, so we can't give you medical advice. It's always best to work with your own doctor because they know you and your medical history and so have access to the bigger picture. Thank you, John Somsky, for supporting me and this podcast by making a pledge at my Patreon page. Do you want to hear your name here at the top of the show? Are you enjoying this podcast and would like to help me make more episodes? Then head to my Patreon page at patreon.com/ketowoman or hit the support button on the Keto Woman podcast website. It means a great deal to me, and you will get to headline the show just like John did today. This week's extraordinary woman is Evelyn de Dominicus. Evelyn is a functional medicine nutritionist specializing in keto, fasting, weight loss resistance, and positive mindset for women approaching or going through perimenopause and menopause. You can find her at evelynd.com. I met Evelyn at KetoFest, and it was great to catch up again in this interview and find out more about her and her business. Welcome, Evelyn, to the Keto Woman Podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm well. It has been a bit of a stressful internet day. But apart from that, I am set up at a friend's house who has reliable internet. And so I'm okay now.
Cortisol levels are starting to come down.
Awesome. Yeah, starting to return back to a normal level. And the steam coming out of my ears has stopped.
Good.
So tell me about you.
Okay. Well, I met you at Keto Fest and it was awesome. We were so busy that week. You were mega busy. I was just like a volunteer trying to help out. I'm a functional medicine nutritionist, just meaning that my study in my graduate program was functional medicine based, meaning looking at entire systems, not kind of the disease based model that some of the traditional dietetic programs would kind of focus on. So you look at all the systems of the body, the hormonal systems, detoxification, digestion, and also the whole mind-body connection. So I've been in practice for about 9 years. Prior to that, I had a 20-year corporate career. And just in my kind of late 30s, I'm 50 now, I got this pull to just do something different. And I've always been into health and nutrition. So I eventually created my exit strategy from corporate America and got my master's degree in nutrition and a bunch of other certifications, energy healing, culinary arts, all kinds of different things I dabbled in that interested me. And I left. I took that leap and I've been doing this ever since, and it's awesome. I'd never go back. So I work primarily with women, that are in the perimenopause, menopause transition, because I find that because I've been through it and continue to go through it, that I can relate so much to women going through that as well. I mean, I love working with like young mothers and fertility and all that good stuff too, but you know, you kind of like attract your tribe by kind of what you're going through as well. So that's been my focus for the past 9 years. So yeah, that's me. I'm a mom. I have three daughters. I live in here in Connecticut. And I've been keto, if you wanted to kind of jump into the keto discussion. I've been keto since about 2015 on and off. I'm going to preface that because for a while in that time, and I've kind of, my journey has been, it's been like junk food in my 20s, right? Smoking cigarettes, partying all the time, junk food, right? Then in my mid 20s, I went vegan, right? And I was just like, okay, I'm going to just be vegan and never eat animals and blah, blah, blah. And then kind of evolved to vegetarian and pescatarian, meaning that I ate fish because I kind of didn't feel right. And then that led me to paleo, and paleo led me to keto.
I was just going to say, you went from full on sort of junk food into vegan. I presume it was it sounds like it's, I need to clean my act up and clean living, yeah. Clean eating. And then you say you moved from that to vegetarian and then started adding fish. Were you just finding that the vegan way of eating wasn't really working or just too hard to stick to, or what was it?
Yeah, I wasn't feeling well. I mean, I was in my 20s at that time. So I had gone from like partying, smoking a pack of cigarettes a day. Like I was just like a mess. Having a lot of fun, but just a real mess. And I always kind of had that inflamed, overweight look, you know, like 20, 30 pounds extra that I was carrying. And I just didn't feel good. I was just like sluggish and just kind of moping through life at such a young age. Like I just didn't have any vitality. So I read a book that my hairdresser recommended, and it was about food combining. This was back in the 80s. I'm old, people. It was called Fit for Life, and it was all about food combining and processed foods. So that really gave me an appreciation for real food. And then it had a very vegan slant to it. So I started to kind of go cold turkey. I quit smoking. I never quit drinking, but except when I was pregnant. But I quit smoking and I started cleaning up my diet. I bought a Vitamix blender and just started to let go of all the animal products. The last food that I got rid of was bacon.
Held on to the very end.
Yes. Yeah. And so then I did it, right? And then, so I was vegan for a few years. Actually got married, then had my first daughter. I was still vegan. And it was after that pregnancy that I started to kind of just not feel great and energy. And you need energy, obviously, with little ones. And so I started to reintroduce some dairy and eggs, and I started to feel a little bit better. Around that time, that was like the 90s, all the processed soy, the marketing around soy products started to come out, like all Morningstar Farms and Boca and all those products over here. That's what the main brands are. And I was like, oh, great. I can have veggie sausage and veggie bacon and oh, good. All the stuff that I used to miss. So I started to kind of just make that a big part of my diet, not really remembering that whole thing about eating real food. And then I started to get sicker and sicker. By the time I had my third child, I got diagnosed with Hashimoto's, and it's no wonder with all that soy, my gut was kind of wrecked from all that. At the time I was eating a little bit of fish. And, so with that, I started really digging into like what's Hashimoto's and what's going on with me. And my doctor was basically like, oh, you're going to take this Synthroid, you know, synthetic T4 for the rest of your life, and come back every few months and we'll check your levels. And if your levels aren't good, we're going to give you more and we'll keep upping your dose. And that's exactly where I was heading.
It's also something that crops up quite often, isn't it, with women, Hashimoto's, when you have a big hormonal change. So puberty, pregnancy, menopause.
Exactly. So it was one of those things that was very much the impetus for me to really delve into alternative approaches to health.
Yeah, I think whenever a doctor says, right, so we're going to start you on this medicine and you're going to be on it for life, and you're probably just going to have to keep taking more and more and more.
Yeah, it's just
red flag.
Exactly. And, you know, at that time, I think I was in my early 30s, and I was just, I was still into nutrition and health, even though I was kind of on this soy bandwagon. And that's when I just started to kind of read and explore what wasn't called functional medicine back then, but right today it would be considered functional medicine. And I started to learn all about the micronutrients involved, how stress plays such a huge role in terms of your thyroid function, and the gut related to autoimmunity, which Hashimoto's is autoimmune thyroid disease. So I started to kind of learn all that stuff and piece things together. I mean, I didn't, you know, figure it out, and I worked with a lot of doctors along the way. But with every kind of exploration, I'd learn a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. And it was kind of like my health is what kind of led me to my path of like becoming a functional nutritionist and working with women very holistically. I mean, I love labs and I love kind of working on, you know, the nuts and bolts of a diet, but I like working with women in terms of their whole story and, you know, what their mindset is and like how are they managing their stress? What are their beliefs, you know, in terms of their body and food and dieting and all that stuff, and really helping them kind of unpack all of that and make those connections with like how some of the beliefs and, you know, physical actions that might we might be taking could be working against us and working against those goals that that we have for ourselves for optimal health.
Yeah, I really like the functional medicine approach. I love that holistic, really taking everything into account, not just, you know, someone comes in with a problem, a symptom, and don't just treat that in isolation. I mean, it makes perfect sense. How can you treat anything really in isolation? Apart from maybe something really obvious, like a broken toe, I suppose. But even that, it's useful to find out, you know, what led to that in the first place. Maybe there's a balance issue or something like that. You know what I mean? It's almost makes no sense not to take that kind of approach.
Agree. I totally agree. Yep.
Sounds like a really fulfilling vocation. And I know you have, you mentioned before that you have a lot of people coming to you, particularly with perimenopause and menopause issues. Maybe we could talk a bit about that, because I think the listeners are going to find that really useful and informative and helpful.
Yeah. So, I mean, everybody has their story. You have yours. I've heard it on the podcast, and everybody that I come into has their own story. And a lot of it, you know, there's the outward story, but then there's that inner story of how we grew up and what we thought of our bodies, you know, really going back to probably preteen with me. I know it was like when I was in junior high school, like sixth, seventh grade, and I just started to notice that, you know, there were some girls that had bodies that looked one way and they had all the boyfriends. And then I had my body and it was kind of like, you know, like whatever it was, I just didn't like it. And I immediately kind of, as soon as I got into high school, which was 14 for me, it was like, how do I make myself smaller? How do I make myself more of that ideal that boys seem to like, right? So, I mean, I wasn't that boy crazy. Well, maybe I was, I don't know. But so then it was, you know, you get into this whole like restriction and over exercising and whatever was, you know, in style at the time in terms of approaches. You know, I did slim fast and Weight Watchers and, you know, starving myself and throwing up and all this stuff. And everybody has a story that might have threads of that, of just not feeling good enough. And for some people, that stays with them very strongly, that need to be a certain size. And it's, I get it, because I was that too. So, it's learning to not necessarily just let yourself go, but can you accept where you are, and can you use food more for healing and nourishment, and use exercise more for like just letting your body kind of express itself and like sweat things out and just move naturally, versus all this forcing, you know, forcing into macros or forcing into a caloric box that will make your body do what you want it to do. And when you get into perimenopause and closer to menopause, which the average age is 51, for me, I was 47, your body will not let you get away with that. It's hormonally, what happens is your ovaries are dialing down their hormone production of like estrogen, progesterone, and the rewiring that goes on in the perimenopause, menopause transition then transfers to your adrenal glands, which are our stress hormone producers. And they also regulate, the adrenals regulate your blood pressure and your adrenaline and noradrenaline. But the most famous hormone that we hear about, especially when it comes to weight and belly fat, is cortisol. So in the hormonal cascade that happens in the perimenopause, menopause transition, now the sex hormone production, which, you know, makes you feel good, makes you have like a strong sex drive, makes you have good energy, good skin, and helps you with fat burning, is now competing with the adrenal gland production of cortisol. So if you're stressed out and you're hating on yourself, and that's the message that you're telling yourself, and you've got a stressful job and you've got kids and all this stuff, you can't get away with it anymore. Your body starts to say, mm-mm. And that's when either weight comes on or diseases pop up, or, you know, whatever other symptoms like hot flashes and night sweats and brain fog and all that other stuff that is associated with menopause. So when I'm working with women, the easiest thing, right, is the diet, you know, for most people. So you get that going, you find the adequate approach to exercise that works for that individual. And for some, it could be vigorous exercise, but for a lot of people that I'm working with, they need more restorative exercise. They need to be outside, not power walking, slow walking, breathing, yoga, those kinds of things, not like pushing like through CrossFit and just running. That's too stressful for the body. And for some women that are struggling, for other women that have it all optimized, they can go for it.
Exactly. For some people, it's a great stress reliever, isn't it? To really work it out like that. But it's just finding which box you fit in and not try and force yourself into the one that you think you should be in.
Exactly. Right. So it's finding the sweet spot for you, and everybody's different. And so I never kind of go in with a preconceived notion. I don't even go in with a preconceived notion that everybody needs to be keto, but I do always have a lens for how many carbs can you tolerate. And, you know, if you can get away with some carbohydrate, which some people can, but most people that are coming to me want to lose weight. So that's already like kind of my clue, one clue of many, that they are kind either dealing with a lot of stress or insulin resistance or both, because both can coexist, of course. So, you know, and then we look at sleep and all the other factors that go in, the diet being kind of the easiest once you kind of get through the, you know, habitual eating and the carb cravings and that stuff. But once that adapts, which happens, you know, usually if the stress is kind of in balance, 6 weeks, I get people adapted, fat adapted for the most part. And then the food's the easiest part of it. And then it's like, okay, where are you getting stuck? Where is your lifestyle, the way that you're living day to day, not in alignment with where you need to be in balance?
And I think that's where the frustrations come in, isn't it? We're used to, most of us have been on and off diets for most of our lives. And quite often, especially the younger you are, you can usually drop weight a lot easier And it's, you know, it seems such a common thing that people say when they're approaching menopause or they're in menopause, that it's just, it feels like it's nigh on impossible to lose weight. I do think, and I don't know how much you find this, but keto in particular seems to help. But another question I was going to ask you, because you said you've been working as a functional medicine nutritionist for what, 9, 10 years, did you say?
Yes.
But you've found out about and started practicing keto yourself more recently. How did you find that impacted your business?
Well, it's a great niche. Well, one, it's trending right now, right? In 2015, it wasn't so much, but there was still a lot of content that I came across. And I always knew, I kind of found out the hard way when I went more paleo, and or even when I was more on the vegetarian, pescatarian side. I was in this health coaching program and was introduced to all of these root vegetables. And I was like, oh, and you know, they were like, you got to roast them and put them in olive oil. And I was roasting trays and trays and trays of like rutabaga and beets and turnip. And through this program, like next thing I knew, I gained 10 pounds from eating vegetables. And I was like, what's up with that? And so I'm eating vegetables. Like, what's that? You know? So then I started to realize like, oh, I can't have a lot of carbs. And I started to really understand that you can be very high carb with paleo. If you are doing a lot of fruit and if you're doing a lot of starchy vegetables, now it's bad again, but if your body isn't responding well, then you're going to notice it in some way or form. So for me, it was weight gain, and that's the worst thing. That's like when my clothes feel tight, or I just don't feel comfortable in my skin. So then that kind of led me to, okay, low carb, and then finally keto. Well, keto now, I should say. And yeah, and so when I first started keto in 2015, I loved it, of course. And I was like paleo keto, so I wasn't doing a ton of dairy. But I started to kind of get, there were some stressful things going on in my life. And it was like, even though I was out of my corporate job, I was doing yoga retreats and just a little bit of discourse there. And there was something that was out of alignment, and I was internally feeling stress. And I got knocked out of ketosis, and I put on, again, 10 pounds. It's that 10 pounds that really drives my life, but 10 pounds. And I was like, oh, keto's not working. It doesn't work for me. But now I revisited it. I kind of stepped away, went back to kind of paleo, and you know, tried other kind of macro configurations. And it just was so not appealing, because like, you either have to go low fat. For me, it's like I gain weight with carbs, so I have to go very low fat, which is so not satiating. And I felt like I had to eat every 2 hours, and having a taste of keto before, I was just like, oh. So I went back. It didn't take me too long. It was maybe 6 months. So I went back to it. And then I started to realize and kind of dig into all the different approaches and focus on that stress piece. That will, I mean, stress raises cortisol. Cortisol raises blood glucose. That raises insulin. And for the insulin resistant person, that's going to knock you out of ketosis if it's chronic. And, you know, I'm kind of wired for stress. So I'm just kind of more of a fight or flight person. I run on that sympathetic part of my nervous system a lot. It's something that I have to prioritize in my life, even more so than carbs, because it will block everything. I could have my diet absolutely perfect, but if my stress is out of sync, then I will feel it. And I will see it and feel it in my clothes. So, yeah. Yeah. So now I intermittent fast. I do keto. I carb up once in a while just to kind of like see what I can get away with. But I usually feel best when I'm keto, like, you know, under like 20 grams of carbs, maybe a little bit of extra non-starchy vegetable here and there. That's when I feel best. And that's when my body feels best. My stomach feels flat, and it works for me. So And everybody's different. So that's what I love. It's like helping people find, like, quote, what they can get away with. Like, because I want them to be able to not live with restriction if they don't want to. Now, in the keto world, there you could basically eat anything that's keto-fied and be completely satisfied. So it's really not a restrictive type of thing, as long as you have the tools and the kind of the recipes and stuff and or access to different foods that still are very satisfying and can keep you in ketosis. So it's not like this, oh, I have to give up this in order to do that. It's like, oh, this feels so much better. So I don't really have to give up anything because I can make a keto cheesecake if I wanted that. So it's like, it's one of those things where you just got to find the right tools.
Exactly. It seems people focus on just these one or two, you know, things that they can't have anymore. Like, you know, how can I live without bread or, you know, whatever it is. And it's like, well, yeah, okay, there is that on one side. But on the other side, just start listing all the things you can have, all the mm-hmm. things you can indulge in, because it feels like an indulgence. That's the thing, isn't it?
Right.
And so, you know, when you're balancing the scales, it is hard to start with, and it is hard, you know, even after a while, you know, people are still going to miss from time to time, you know, that lovely crusty bit of bread or something. But, you know, you find something else, or you have an extra piece of bacon, or, you know, another slice of cheese, or something else Ooh. Delicious, and it passes.
Exactly. And there's wine. So,
exactly. Oh, wine and cheese. What more could you want?
Totally keto.
So you have quite a few women coming through your doors. And what would you say is the most common complaint? What are they coming to you asking for your help for the most?
Well, mostly I hear, you know, I feel stuck. Like, hey, kind of what you said, like what I used to be able to do to snap me back into shape no longer works. And hey, I never had this tire around my middle, and now, you know, I can't get rid of this thing, you know. And of course, they say it with just such disdain for themselves. And, you know, it's heartbreaking because it's like you can't really, you have to approach it from a place. I mean, I don't want to, it's kind of overused, but of self-love, but you definitely can't come at it from a place of self-hate, because that energy, not to sound too woo, but like that energy doesn't attract what you want. You know, it attracts more of what you're focusing on, that negative. So it's always kind of more of a negative mindset, weight loss resistance, and just in general, like people feeling stuck and frustrated. Like, I tried keto and it's not working for me. And, you know, I need a better meal plan. And it's like, maybe, but it's, you know, you can look at 1,000 meal plans, and, you know, I have access to tons of them, but it's more about that holistic piece, like what's going on in terms of your entire life cycle and lifestyle, I should say, you know, sleeping, stress, mindset, movement. It all has to be in balance. And then the food, like I said, is the easiest piece, but they think that's it. It's like, oh, it's the food. I do get a lot of people that also have some patterns, like emotional eating patterns, binge eating patterns, and that's tough too, because some of that is, you know, our patterns can be ingrained in us from a very young age, and working through that has been actually very challenging. But I've learned so much through it that, you know, it's not about, you know, beating it your client into submission. Like, no, you can't have that, and like, you need to follow this plan. But more being that space for them to recognize their patterns and understand that they're empowered to make different choices. And the visual I have is, so it's all neuroscience, actually. So we've got pathways. So the analogy that I use is, imagine like a superhighway, a freeway that's well-traveled. You can go 90 miles an hour on it. And that's representing your habit. So reaching for the nuts and devouring a whole bag whenever there's some sort of stress trigger, or even if you're over-hungry. And so in contrast, imagine that there's this open field and you see a red house. And the red house is representing your ideal behavior. And so you start to take your car down this field that there's no road, and it's really bumpy and hard to get through, and you're bouncing all over the place. And then you just keep going on that behavior, that road, that path, and you start to smooth out the grass. And you keep going and you keep smoothing. And the more that you repeat that behavior and not go on the superhighway, it becomes more of a smooth road. It becomes a new neural pathway. And that superhighway, that old habit, starts to overgrow. And so it starts to become less appealing and accessible to you. So you start to kind of shut off. That neural pathway starts to kind of fizzle away. And now you've got this new pathway with ideally your optimal behavior, which will give you the best result. I mean, and then there's other things that you can unpack there, like in terms of, you know, why, you know, am I trying to numb out? And I know like this was something with me with wine when I was in corporate America, like I'd come home or, you know, get off my calls for the day and I'd be like, where's the wine? And I'd have 2-3 glasses of wine just to not feel what I should have just allowed myself to feel, which was that stress release and maybe frustration or whatever is that uncomfortable feeling that we're trying to avoid.
Yes, exactly. We really need to just sit with those feelings, don't we? And yeah. Let them flow through from a place of my therapist, which I guess would just call it a place of curiosity and compassion, and just be with them for a while and find out, you know, what's going on, rather than what we tend to do, which is just try and numb them, push them down, push them away, because they're not necessarily pleasant feelings to feel, are they?
Yeah, we want to avoid them. So we want to avoid discomfort. That's human. Yeah. So yeah, using alcohol is a common one, but we can of course use food as well, shopping, gossiping, too much TV, too much exercise. Like there's so many different things that we do to try to avoid those feelings. And like I was saying, it's human, because we're wired to not be comfortable, not be uncomfortable. So we try to avoid discomfort. And when we really actually allow those feelings to be expressed and released, we realize like, oh, we didn't die. Like it's not great to feel discomfort or pain or fear or sadness, but it's not going to kill us. And so by keeping it in, you know, I see this a lot and I've seen it with myself. It's like keeping in stress or trying to avoid conflict. It in my body, and I see this with other clients too, and friends and family, it's almost like you're carrying a weight, and then it expresses itself as weight gain or the inability to lose weight. And it literally is a weight for us. So
absolutely. All those feelings, they fester, don't they? I think, you know, we do tend to internalize things as women in particular, and that manifests in so many ways, doesn't it? Like you say, it manifests as weight gain, but it can really manifest as all sorts of other different kinds of pain, I think. You know, it can headaches or different kind of tension stresses in our body, or, you know, neck pain, back pain, all sorts of things. And we do really need to learn to release this. And funnily enough, it was something I was talking about with my counselor yesterday, about releasing those burdens, like you say, that we carry around, and any kind of anger or bitterness we feel to people is to embrace that sort of spirit of forgiveness and letting things go. Because if you don't, it stays in you, and it does actually end up causing a physical and emotional, for sure, but a physical damage, doesn't it?
It does. Dr. Christiane Northrup, she's somebody I follow and admire so much. She wrote a book called The Wisdom of Menopause. That's just a Bible for me. I don't love all of her nutrition stuff, like she's a soy proponent, but she does recognize the whole blood sugar thing. But what I really love about her work is she connects the physical with the spiritual, emotional. And so, like, for instance, with fibroids, she shares her story, but she has found in her practice and in her work that fibroids, which, you know, they're like tumors in your uterus and, you know, down in the, so you could have ovarian and all different kinds of tumors down there that could be benign, but they, her theory is that they are unexpressed creativity. And she has other similar correlations with like breast cancer. Like it's just giving too much and not receiving enough from others. So yeah, there's a lot of that. And then just the other thing that came to mind while you were talking about that is animals in the wild who don't get modern diseases like we do, they shake things off. Even our domestic dogs and cats too. I'll notice they'll like wrestle, you know, and they're having fun, but it's like, a, you know, kind of pseudo aggressive. And then they both shake off and they're shaking off the residual stress that they experience through that little wrestling. And animals in the wild, if they get chased, like a deer gets chased, it will shake off the fear that it was feeling when it was, you know, potential prey. So, yeah, so we don't tend to do that unless we're very mindful of it. We tend to just keep it all inside, and that can manifest in weight is one way, but all these other imbalances and physical symptoms and diseases even. So, yeah.
Well, and it's too much of a continual stress, isn't it? Now, you talk about that sort of in the wild type stress, the whole fight or flight thing that we're, you know, our body is a perfectly adapted to dealing with stress, but usually dealing with, you know, not too frequent stress.
Yeah.
And so sort of we can have a major stressor like, oh, there's something coming towards me that's going to kill me. I've got to get away from it. But, you know, we have these sort of slightly lower type stresses, but consistent all the time, all the time, all the time. And we really need to find a way to just get rid of that.
Right. Shut down the phone. You know, then there's stress we can't control that we don't even know is happening, which could be things like Wi-Fi pollution, toxins in foods, toxins in our water, toxins in our air. I mean, that stuff we can't really avoid unless we're going to live in a bubble. But we can shut off our phones at night, make sure that they're not on our bedstand. Like that's a huge sleep one. Where, you know, making sure you're not getting exposure to blue light after night, you know, at 7 p.m. is usually I'll put on those ugly glasses and making sure that I'm not scrolling through my phone and just giving yourself a little break from the technology stress. And that not only is it technology from the EMFs, the frequencies, but also from the content that's coming over, right? So if it's an email or something on Instagram that makes you feel inadequate, or even just processing information all the time, we're always on, like you said, it's like, just, we gotta be able to shut it out once in a while to have more balance.
And you can feel it, can't you? I mean, I tend to avoid places now where I'm gonna get in a real ruck on Facebook, but I can, you know, I can remember the kind of arguments I used to get onto on Facebook, and I would literally be shaking, you know, and that is not the kind of thing that you need to be doing at 10 o'clock at night or whatever it is.
No.
It's you can literally feel it coursing through your body.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Yes, the healthy thing is to try and avoid that as much as possible. But if it does happen, you've got to find a way to release it.
Oh, yeah. I don't watch the news. I haven't watched the news for years, and I won't. I mean, I get some news that seeps through Facebook or, you know, whatever, my email once in a while, but I don't go there. I just don't. And maybe I'm ignorant. Maybe I'm sticking my head in the sand. But at the same time, what am I going to do about it? I'm going to work on my zone of influence and try to help one woman at a time, help spread the word about, you know, finding balance, healthy food, crap in our food. Those are things that I know I'm called to do. You know, it sounds a little bit dramatic, but I feel those are things that make me like passionate. And so those are the things that I'm going to use my sphere of influence. So watching the news, which is just, you know, so triggering on so many, like it's designed so that you keep watching. And, it's just one of those things where I've decided not going to watch it. And I don't watch a lot of, I mean, I watch some action TV, but I mean, I do watch Game of Thrones, but
doesn't watch Game of Thrones? You have to watch Game of Thrones. But I know what you mean, and I have that struggle myself with avoiding the news. You know, you feel like you should be informed, but then when you watch it, it stresses you out so much. And I think sometimes it's good to take a break from that and work on, apart from anything else, if you work on reducing your own stress and you build your own strength, you might get to a place where you can deal with it much more easily anyway.
Exactly. And be more effective.
Exactly.
I'm always like those Facebook rants, you know, because I do have some friends that do that. And they'll rant, and it's just like, well, what's that changing? It's just creating more of the negativity. Like, if you really are passionate about it, do something about it outside of ranting on social media, right? So it's like, if that really is something that is speaking to you, do something more than just contributing to the negative threads that are just perpetuating and making, you know, just doing nothing other than perpetuating the hate. So. Yeah.
Yes, it's very easy. It's a very easy thing to get pulled into, and the old red mist come down, and before you know it, you've got that back and forth. And yeah, you just need to just sometimes pull away and leave the kind of groups that, you know, that triggers that kind of behavior. Do you find though that in general, keto or certainly low carb helps most of the women who are dealing with menopause type issues?
I do. And, you know, of course, it's the insulin resistance is number one. But I also find that when you're eating less frequently, like if you just naturally fast or if you intentionally fast, you give the digestive system such a nice break. And you're not eating every 2-3 hours, which is the standard American diet way. You have to eat every 2 or 3 hours, or else you're going to get hangry and overeat, and just your appetite is driving everything, right? So with keto, I just find that one of the best benefits other than managing that blood sugar response is giving the digestive system a rest. And then of course the brain benefits, like just being able to focus and that calming keto feeling, like the world needs more of that. So, you know, there's so many different aspects to it that are beneficial. And from a hormonal perspective, like I described with the adrenals taking over production of your sex hormones in the perimenopause, menopause transition, that like blood sugar stuff becomes just major, majorly important. Like I said, you focus on the food that is the easiest thing. The stress patterns are, you know, kind of like then where you really have to go and just like, okay, what can you let go of? What are you trying to not feel? What's going on deeper than just your diet?
And do you find there are particular balances that, or does it completely vary, different sort of macro balances that predominantly work well? Do you find that, you know, that people have to moderate protein and eat more fat or eat higher protein and keep their fat a bit lower? Is there a common thread throughout, or is it completely variable depending on the individual?
Well, I work with a lot of groups, and my meal plans are basically designed on the traditional kind of like moderate protein. So 3 to 4 ounces at a sitting, and then fat being more of that variable, and the carbs being around 20 total grams, maybe 30 if it's only vegetables. I find nuts can be like such a slippery slope for people in terms of over consuming and that fiber. I don't know. And some people are super sensitive to the veggies too. So, but where I find, and especially when it comes to weight loss, is once you get those macros kind of dialed in, and if you're working out heavy, you know, like weight training and stuff like that, super duper like, you know, endurance type of activities, you might need more protein as well. But what I usually find is that the lever is the fat macro. And usually at first I want them to kind of eat to satiety, like listen to your body, eat to satiety. And then once they're fat adapted, if they're not losing weight or they get stalled, then we kind of scale back the fat and allow the body to use its own stored body fat for fuel. you don't want to do that too soon because then the fat adaption might not happen because of stress. So you make sure that they're fully fat adapted. They have all the signs of that. You can test your ketones if you want. And then if they're not progressing towards their goals, then scale back the fat in very slow increments. That's the thing with women and keto and fasting. It's like you kind of have to go slow. Even transitioning into keto from like a standard American diet or even just a higher carb paleo diet, you don't want to go from, 100 carbs a day to 20 overnight. You just start to scale down for about a week or so. Make sure you feel okay, that you're not kind of getting those stress signals, because that'll just block everything. You might as well just have a donut if you're going to, if your body's going to perceive what you're doing as a stress. And same with fasting. If it feels natural to skip breakfast or not have dinner, fine, but don't go to like a 24, fasting schedule right off the bat. Start to kind of inch your way into like, okay, can I go 14 hours? Can I go 15, 16? And making sure that it feels good, but it's a balance because your appetite is, especially your clock appetite, it's very programmed. Like I'll use my dogs as an example. They know when it's 6 a.m. and they know when it's 5 p.m. and they don't have watches. So our appetites are similar. If we're always used to having breakfast at 8 a.m., it's going to take about 3 days for your body to adjust to having it at 11. So, you don't want to make that a stressful event, but you also have to recognize that your body will adapt.
So you find that bringing in intermittent fasting helps quite a lot with your clients as well?
Yeah, because it's just so easy to just have one or two meals a day. Like I'm pretty much a two meal a day person. I do one meal a day if I'm really busy. But everybody's a little different. So if somebody's stressing out about it, or if they're dealing with some other issues, I'm fine with bypassing the fasting and just sticking with like getting your macros right. So it's, that's individual. So that's kind of how I start with like a general framework, and then you tweak based upon how the person's feeling and their results and blah, blah, blah. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. You have to start somewhere, don't you? And do where can people find you? Do you have to see people face to face? Do you work with people on the internet as well?
Yeah, I work with people online mostly, actually. So I have a website, evelynd.com, and I have like a free meal plan there. It's like the Keto Kickstart. It's like a real food approach. So simple meal plan that's free. You just get that downloaded, and then you'll be subscribed to my newsletter. And I send out a newsletter every few weeks, every week sometimes. I run programs. I work with people face-to-face here in Connecticut too. If you're local, that's great, but most people are not. So I have packages and all kinds of stuff. So yeah.
The wonderful world of the internet.
I know, it's great. It
gives you access to someone anywhere in the world. I mean, yes, my counselor that I work with, he's in the south of England, and it matters not.
It doesn't. Even my accountant's in Florida, and I'm up here in Connecticut, and she's fabulous. So it's like, it doesn't really matter anymore. I'd rather have a great person that I click with than somebody who happens to be close by who I don't click with. So
exactly. It works perfectly both ways, doesn't it? As a business owner, you're not restricted. Your client base isn't just restricted to the town you live in. And, as a customer looking for somebody, you're the same. You're not restricted to whoever's local. It's amazing. As long as your internet is working, of course. So perhaps you could wrap up with a top tip for our listeners.
Top tip would be, listen to that little voice, listen to your body, which I know is kind of nebulous, but listen to your body. It is always telling you something, whether it be bloating or a headache or fatigue or weight gain or whatever. It's always telling you something, and it will keep telling you until you listen. And those signals, those whispers, as they say, will get louder and louder until you do. So just do yourself a favor and listen to your body, listen to that inner voice, and it will never steer you wrong if you do. So I think that's the most important thing, even when it comes to every choice you make with eating, every interaction that you have with another person. Just try to kind of be very as mindful as you can about, like, okay, what am I experiencing in this? What's that person experiencing in this situation? What's my body telling me? And then listen to it. And it's always communicating. So I think that's the most important tip that I've learned along this journey so far.
Yes, I really feel that keto helps with that. It certainly has with me. It certainly helped me tune in a lot more to things like hunger and satiety signals.
Yeah.
It just seems to bring you out of that fog, really, where you don't know exactly what you're feeling. And mm-hmm. I can remember way back before I had the weight loss surgery and started on my weight loss journey for real, rather than the constant ups and downs. And that was the difference. It's just getting those signals dialed in a bit. You know, I can remember sort of never really being particularly hungry, or never really feeling full either. You know, mm-hmm. it just always sort of kind of wanting to snack on stuff constantly.
I know just
so
what
it's yeah, and it's nice. And I think that's one of the nice things about doing a bit of fasting, actually, is to really see the difference between head hunger and real proper stomach growling hunger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then another thing, not to go on off another tangent, but being able to experience, feel your body and that urge passing once in a while is so empowering, because it's not like, oh, I'm hungry, I better eat or I'll die. Like, I think that's what part of our brain tells us, that the lower part of our brain. That's not the case at all. It's like, yeah, oh, that's a wave of hunger and it passed. And like, oh, I wasn't hungry again for another 3 hours. Like, what's up with that? That's so cool. So I think it's fasting and keto, and fasting with keto is just a sweet spot, right? That's just so much easier. I don't know how people do it without being keto, but they do. I honor their process. But for me, it would be that constant gnawing and like needing to eat and just a frenzy in my eating window, so to speak. So yeah, I know exactly what you're
saying. It's very freeing, isn't it? You don't have that panic anymore. If you've got a day ahead of you where you're thinking, oh, I'm not sure when I'm going to have time to eat, well, you know, you don't need to worry about it. You set yourself up with a good breakfast, and we sort of lose that panic a bit. It's not going to be the end of the world if we can't eat until dinner time.
Yeah.
We'll survive. I think it's very empowering. That's what I like about it. It really seems to give people confidence in themselves and what they can do.
I agree. And in nearly every situation, it's like for travel, for work, for every, you know, it's just like, oh, I'll just fast. No big deal.
Exactly. Well, thank you, Evelyn. It's been wonderful talking to you today.
Same here. Thank you so much, Daisy.
To get the resources and links from the show, please go to ketowomanpodcast.com. Are you my next extraordinary woman? Maybe you've got an idea for a show, a topic you want to hear about. Let me know how I can tickle your earbuds by dropping me a line at daisy@ketowomanpodcast.com. If you fancy joining me on this exciting adventure and want to help me create new episodes, please go to my Patreon page at patreon.com/ketowoman, or simply hit the support button on the Keto Woman podcast website. It's thanks to the two keto dudes that I'm hosting this podcast, so please consider heading to their Patreon page at patreon.2keto.com and help them bring you more podcasts like this one. Please help other people hear about and find this podcast by reviewing the show on iTunes and Facebook. Every star and review really does help. It doesn't go unnoticed by me, the people who regularly like, share, and comment on my posts. Your support means the world to me. Thank you. Today's quote is an old Chinese proverb. Tension is who you think you should be. Relaxation is who you are. Bye-bye, keto lovelies.